Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the Kosafa Show with Mark Gleason and Nick Seg.
Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome yet again to another Kosafa Show. And what a top lineup we have again for you this week.
We have Bafana coach Malefi Nseki, who's gearing up for the Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers that are due to kick off again in November.
And the CAF Secretary General, Abdul Monim Ba, explains to us just what the program for African football in the near future is going to look like.
We also have the new technical director of the Mauritius Football Association, Zunaid Mal, who takes us through his program in that country.
Our first guest today is the coach of South Africa, Molefe Nseke, who celebrates a year in the job this month, although the COVID-19 pandemic has limited his time in the dugout. With the Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers set to resume in November, that is all about to change.
But before that, SAFA hope to arrange two friendly matches for Bafana Bafana in the October FIFA window, which will be the first games for the national team in almost a year. Coach, welcome. What have you been up to during this period without football?
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thanks for having me. Yeah, it has been very, very tough, very difficult for all football-loving people. Yes, it is correct. I was appointed in August and I've just ended a year in this position as a Bafana coach. I think it has been a very roller coaster type of a year with so much happening in football and also a learning curve for myself and my technical team. But I think the support that I've been getting from every coach, every player, every South African, all the media platforms, it has been very good. So we have gone through the 6 months, the 5 months without kicking any football. It has been very difficult. But I must say, seeing football being played in Europe, in Spain, in England, in Germany, and recently seeing the end of the Champions League and the Europa League, it has been very good to all football-loving people. And coming home to South Africa, we have seen the PSL resuming, and the PSL is now towards the end. And we have seen also the Black Africa Championship also resuming, and now we are nearing an end. So it has been a very interesting period after going through all the hard times.
Coach, obviously when you began with the Nations Cup qualifiers, beating Sudan, of course, in your last match in November last year, you would have had in your mind basically roughly the players that you were going to be picking. Now, how different do you think it will be almost a year later? You think there will be a radical change in the look of your squad, or will we see pretty much the same consistent selection that you had picked before?
Yeah, I think we had a good time in profiling players and observing players and keeping contact with players overseas. That has helped because when we were to announce the team to play Sao Tome, we had a fully fleshed information in terms of what to expect from each of those players who were selected in the team because they were playing regularly for their teams. But now it's a bit of a difficult situation for us because we do not see much of them playing. The only time that we tend to see them is those who are locally based, who are playing for the PSL teams. But those who are overseas, we have a program that is giving us information about our players that are based abroad, which is very much of help to us. because most of them will be starting with their leagues now in August, and hopefully we will be able to get more information in terms of their playing minutes and how much they have, maybe how good are they doing for their clubs. When it comes to the next FIFA week, it is going to be very difficult because now we have already started profiling players during this last period of the 6-7 matches of the PSL. So if we are to select players, we will be selecting players based on the performance that we have seen now during the resumption of football, which should be a bit of a challenge for us. We are hopeful that those who are based overseas will also have enough playing minutes to warrant a call-up to come to the national team. So when it comes to the next friendly match that we are to play, it will be of great help because that will be the only time where we'll be able to see our players and be able to assess and profile them accordingly before we go into the AFCON qualifiers in November.
Coach, speaking of those qualifiers in November, you've obviously got Sao Tome home and away, who you had expected to play in March, but that's now been pushed to November. They're regarded, I guess, as one of the minnows of the continent, but I'm sure a side that you cannot take lightly. You know, they have players playing in Portugal, France, and even Argentina at the moment. What are you expecting from them?
Look, I think before we went to play Sao Tome, we got their games against Ghana, against Sudan. With our selection, we actually gave them a lot of respect because we are fully aware that they're a hard-running team. They can defend very well. They are very compact in defense, and they can catch you on the counter. So we are not looking down upon anybody because we are fully aware that all the teams that are in our group deserve to be in our group. They are quality sides, and we also want to qualify for AFCON. So when it comes to Sao Tome, when you look back into the type of players that we brought into the team, we were looking for speed, strength, and power because we are fully aware that for us to beat Sao Tome, we need to give much of that, the right attitude when it comes to the game itself. Also, because if we don't take the game to them, it will be very difficult. We saw how Ghana scored the penalty and how the penalty came about. So we are giving a lot of respect to Sao Tome in terms of the type of a team they are.
Coach, the CAF have announced that the Nations Cup will be completed first, the qualifiers, before we start now with the World Cup, which was really supposed to start in November. The World Cup qualifiers are condensed into three windows, each with two games. It's very squashed. Do you see that as a positive or as a negative? Because you can get some rock and roll momentum going there, but at the same time, it can also be a little bit of a logjam. How do you perceive that, the fact that you're going to be playing so many key games so quickly back to back?
I think the new normal is asking all of us to be very consistent in our performances in terms of getting quality out of our players. And I think I have engaged the medical team in this case to give us all the medical reports of the players that we'll be bringing into camp. We have also devised means in terms of our GPS scores, how to interpret GPS scores, how the GPS scores will help us to come up with a tactical plan, a formation going into those matches. Because like you said, if you are playing back-to-back matches, it will also give us some rhythm in the team. It will also give us some understanding in terms of what you want to see happening and what you want to achieve. Although we can't leave out possibilities of injuries during those matches. But I think on the positive side, if we play such type of matches, such type of fixtures, it will also give us an idea in terms of the rhythm in the team, the tactical understanding, the tactical cohesion in the team, because our players haven't been playing for a very long time. And for the national team, that is that was a bit of a setback. And them coming in and having to play in those three phases, back-to-back matches, I think it will help us to get the rhythm right. And also because the attitude is very important when it comes to such matches. South Africans, we are a highly talented country, but the bigger challenge for me is how do we achieve what we want? Do we really want to compete in terms of ability with the rest of the world, or we also want to have something special that will work for us to end up qualifying for the World Cup? So I'm saying come next year, playing those back-to-back matches, we will always be looking at the positive side of it, and the positive side of it maybe will give us the rhythm that we are looking for.
Coach, you mentioned earlier about players overseas, and we've recently seen Kamohelo Mokotjo join Cincinnati FC in the United States. When you review your players abroad, does it matter to you the standard of the league they play in? I mean, no disrespect to the MLS, but it's not the same level as England, Spain, or Italy, or so on.
Yeah, I think if you're talking of our players playing abroad, it's a very big challenge for all of us, because when you look at West African countries and North African countries, their players are playing in top leagues in Europe and playing for top teams in Europe, and they are regulars in the Champions League, in the Europa League. But when it comes to South African players, we don't have such players competing at that level. And it's a very big concern, because if we are saying to qualify for the World Cup, we need to be in the top five. It means being in the top five, you have to play and beat those players who are playing regularly in those top leagues. And if ever you don't produce top players playing in top leagues, it's a bit of a challenge for the national team. I am hopeful that wherever we export players, they will end up doing well in whatever league they will find themselves in, and ultimately get to play in the top leagues. Yes, Mokotjo was playing in the Champions League in England. Now he has moved to MLS. For him, he has got his own reasons, personal reasons, why he has moved to America. But like you said, we would love to see most of our players playing in top leagues and getting the right competition, the right mentality whenever they have to come to the national team. That attitude, that mentality will add value to the team, and then we'll see our team doing well in the qualifiers and doing well in the AFCON and hopefully qualifying for the World Cup.
But you're also talking of targets and top five and top three. SAFA have often said that they want Bafana to be consistently a top three team in African football. But obviously, we've been outside that for a long time. What do you think you need to do to get to that status?
I think it's also about the quality of players that we produce in our country. With the program that we are using now of getting information about players that are based abroad, those that are playing regularly are playing in those, maybe I might be wrong to say small leagues, but they are not playing in top leagues. But the good thing about them is that they are playing regularly. And that will help if ever we have to bring such players into the team. Because we are now placed 13, it means we have to do well to be in the top three, in the top five. And the quality of players, the right attitude, the right mentality will take us to that position. Because in terms of the technical challenges as coaches, we keep on improving on a daily basis, because we are in contact with the outside world. But the most important thing is to see our players also playing at top level, getting challenged on a weekly basis in terms of playing against the top countries, the top players. So it's going to be a bit of a challenge if we are talking of a period where we are saying those players who are playing abroad and those players who are playing for the so-called small countries, they will end up graduating into top leagues. And getting into top leagues, it means there will be top players, and top players will always bring quality into the senior national team.
Abdul Munam Ba was appointed as the permanent Secretary General of the Confederation of African Football in June after a three-month period in an acting capacity, having previously held the position of Commercial Director.
He takes the role in a difficult time for CAF due to the COVID-19 pandemic, with plenty of uncertainty over when international football might return. But there is light at the end of the tunnel, and in a recent sit-down with the South African Football Journalists Association, Barr has revealed plans around the revised dates for the next Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers,
plus the preliminaries ahead of the World Cup in Qatar in 2022.
Then the plan is quite basic. We will finish first the AFCON qualifiers. So ideally, we want to play the match day 3 and 4 in November and 5 and 6 during the first half of 2021. Okay. Once we finish the AFCON 2021 qualifiers, then we'll resume the World Cup qualifiers with the group phase and the playoff. So ideally, we would like to finish the World Cup qualifiers by the end of 2021 or at the latest by March 2022, taking into account that the draw will be organized by FIFA in April, if I'm not wrong. So this is the plan, basically.
What does CAF plan to do in instances where National League has been cancelled for the 2019-20 season, but they still need to put forward teams for the CAF interclub competitions in the 2020-21 campaign?
What we are proposing, and actually this is something planned by the in the regulations, is to leave it to the federations to propose us the clubs to be engaged. Where, for instance, if the league has been cancelled, this edition has been cancelled, they can engage the same team as last year. So at the end, we let each federation choose if they want to homologate the current ranking and they propose us their best team, or if they want to propose the teams of last year.
We assume there have also been discussions around the junior continental finals that are due to be played and which also serve as qualifiers for FIFA finals in the various age group categories.
No, definitely, yes. You know that we are supposed to play the under 20 next year in Mauritania and the under 17 AFCON next year in Morocco. So we are keeping the same dates next year. The issue that we have today are the qualifiers. You know that we were supposed to organize zonal tournaments in each of the 6 zones to qualify the teams to the under 20 and to the under 17. It was not possible, obviously, to play these zonal tournaments. In case some of them, they have difficulties to organize the zonal tournament, we'll try to find other formats to qualify the teams. But yes, this summer, we are fully focused on finding a way to get the qualified teams for the under 20, under 17. We'll try to favor as much as possible the organization if the conditions are met of zonal tournaments as initially planned between now and the end of this year.
Sir, if I might just ask you about the next 2 CAF congresses. I believe there's one set for December. Would you be able to reveal where that is? And then another one for March for the elections. Where will that one be?
So the one in December, planned for 11th of December, if I'm not mistaken, will take place in Addis Ababa. We are always considering that maybe if the conditions are not met, if the sanitary situation in Africa doesn't evolve properly in a good way, so we have the backup solution of doing it remotely as a virtual meeting. So this is why we push it till December. We prefer to have it as a physical meeting. So we push it till the very last moment. In Addis Ababa, because this is the easiest way, the easiest town to reach in Africa. But in case we cannot, for any reason, so it will be done virtual. And for the General Assembly, the elective one in March, we don't have yet the country, but it will be announced on due time.
Have you come up with a format yet for the Women's Champions League competition that is set to kick off next year?
Definitely, you know that we are pushing a lot to empower our zonal union, because this is also a good way to face one of the big issues that we have in Africa, which are the travels, which are very complicated. As of today, we are still working on the format. What I can tell you is that at the end, we will organize a final tournament for this Women's Champions League. So we will organize a final tournament. We don't know yet about the number of teams. It will be a minimum of 8 teams for the first edition, maybe more. And regarding the qualifiers, I mean, it will depend. It will depend if we have a lot of clubs who wants to engage, and this is something that we are trying to assess today. So we will have to organize qualifiers, and definitely if we organize qualifiers, we prefer to do them on a zonal basis. If not, we can qualify the best 8-12 teams directly to the final tournament. So for the moment, we are still working on different options. Hope that in the next few weeks, we will be able to announce the final format of this new competition.
Are you speaking to FIFA about Africa's allocation for the next Women's World Cup in 2023, which will be expanded from 24 to 32 teams? And if you do get more teams, will this change the qualification procedure?
First, you know that today, the qualifiers for the Women's World Cup, as of today, it's done through the Women AFCONs. I mean, the three best teams of the Women's AFCON qualify to the Women's World Cup. We are currently in discussion with FIFA regarding the new editions, the new format of the Women World Cups. You know that we will have more teams qualified. So we are expecting to have more slots for Africa. So we are discussing about the details, how many additional slots we will have, and also what would be the best way to qualify the team to the Women's World Cup. So we don't know yet if we'll keep on doing it as it is today through the Women's AFCON, or we will be using the international window, but we don't have a lot, to play qualifiers the same way that we are doing it today with the men. But you know that in Africa, it could be a little bit more challenging because of the cost, mainly for each team. The travel costs are huge. So we are still in discussion. We don't know yet if we will keep it as it is through the Women's AFCON. And in that case, I would say it will be simple. We will have it in 2022. And maybe the best 5-6 teams of the Women AFCON will qualify to the Women World Cup, or we will do a dedicated qualifiers phases.
I know that the dates for the 2021 AFCON, which of course has been moved to 2022, were put into January and February, and we understand very well the reason why that was, because of weather and whatnot. Is it going forward after this tournament, is it still CAF's preference to play the tournaments in June, July, or in January, February?
Actually, we modified our regulations. In our regulations today, the AFCON has to be played in June, July. So definitely, this is our preference. But as you know, when we did this modification, moving the AFCON from Jan, Feb to June, July, we already awarded editions to Cameroon, Côte d'Ivoire, and Guinea. So at the end, basically, for these three countries, maybe we will have to adapt. So we had to do it for Cameroon because it has been requested by the host. As of today, we did not receive similar requests from Côte d'Ivoire, from Guinea. Obviously, we are discussing it with the host countries. But definitely, now the AFCON will be played in June, July, except on some exceptional cases, maybe the upcoming tournaments. But then definitely, when we will open the bids for the other editions, definitely we will always favor countries that can host the competition during June, July.
FIFA President Gianni Infantino spoke in Rabat earlier this year about an African Super League and an Africa Cup of Nations held every 4 years. But are those realistic options, or are they non-starters?
Regarding the discussions of Rabat, so maybe first one regarding the AFCON every 4 years. In Rabat already, it has been decided that we will not, as of today, consider this option. So the AFCON will keep the current AFCON every 2 years. Regarding the Super League, at the opposite, the EXCO has decided to put in place an ad hoc committee in charge of studying the possibility to modify the format of our inter-clubs competitions to make them maybe more attractive, more competitive. So this is something that we are currently studying.
Our next guest, Junaid Mal, was appointed as technical director for the Mauritius Football Association in March, bringing years of experience as a coaching instructor for CAF and also as head of the technical study group at numerous CASAFA Cup tournaments.
Junaid, welcome. I guess the timing was not great with COVID-19 having shut down football in Mauritius over the last 5 or so months, but what have you been up to since you took over?
Good afternoon, Mark and Nick. No, the 3 months of the lockdown really taken its toll in terms of what our program is. But we were not basically left out of the football sector because we had arranged lots of Zoom and Google Meets with all the technical directors from the South and East, piecing together a standardized licensee for the entire region. So we've been quite busy during that period of time.
So Nate, obviously you will have set out some short, medium and long-term goals. Can you tell us what the critical immediate challenges are for you in this job?
Okay, immediately we've set up in line with the convention, CAF convention. So women in football, we've now appointed a new person, a lady to head up that department immediately. Our grassroots program, we've appointed a new manager, a female that has taken over running of the grassroots program. Coach education, fundamentally important. We have set up our new licenses for grassroots, for license D, and in the process of completing our licensee program in line with the CAF convention. So those three have been the short-term goal. Medium-term goal is to get the youth structures organized in terms of regional football leagues. And thereafter, we want to bring in zonal teams, which will be more of a long-term basis, and that will supply our national teams from U15 for both boys and girls right up to seniors.
Mauritius has a population of around 1.3 million, and as well as a diaspora to add to that. It does make competing with the likes of a South Africa, who have 50 times that number of people, a challenge. What, in your mind, does Mauritian football need to do to elevate its level long-term on the international stage?
I think we need to be innovative. I'm quite impressed with the Icelandic setup with a small population. The first thing they went into was ensure that there was good coach education. Two was to ensure that the development of football in the communities and the schools are something that has to be taken very seriously. And once you create a scenario at that level and pique the interest of the young boys and girls in our primary school setups, those are the players, and for long term in terms of making it football interesting enough for them, and it must be fun. And I think if we bring about that culture in the communities and the schools, I think we can bring about a big change in terms of the mindset of people in terms of football as a career.
Obviously, they're Mauritius, because they're not really role models in a sporting sense. You don't have any sort of big name footballers. How difficult is that to get kids galvanized? And also, when there's such a prevalent culture there in terms of support for French and for British soccer teams, that there's no real galvanization of the local football structure. How difficult is it to get that mindset all changed, and particularly to get the kids motivated because they're no role models?
Look, there's two ways to look at it, from Mark, because there are some players that have now, one player, Nazira, has gone to the States. Adele is playing in Portugal, so people already know about it. Then we had the John Mark Etiers and the Sebastian Becks that people still talk quite a bit about. And then if you take the COSAFA U17 tournament that has Mauritius hosted for 3 years, including one CAF qualifier, and Mauritius from year one were knocked out in the first phase. Year number two, they got to the final. Year number three, they got to the semi-final of the CAF qualifier. So I think there's lots that we can take from those things to ensure that people will still have an interest in local football. I mean, the stadium at St. Francois was at capacity level for the semi-final and final. So those are the types of things that we need to do, is take it back to the communities, to develop in the communities. And there's enough role models in the communities, I think.
As Mark mentioned earlier, you've been a leader of the CASAFA Technical Study Group at numerous tournaments in recent years. Are there any trends that you've picked up in terms of Southern African football evolving?
Trends in the sense of, sure, technically our players are, I would say, of a high quality. Physically, I think in some countries we lack the physical part of the football side of it in terms of bringing in experts to do physical training and specifically to football. I think our biggest problem here is more on the mental side. How do we make our players stronger mentally? Because if you can win the mental battle, I think we can take this to the next level in the sense of players' determination to wanting not only to play in the country that they are or in the region that we are, to move across and try and apply their trade in the Europe or somewhere overseas from where we are. Zimbabwe is a perfect example of players wanting to get out of Zimbabwe just to make sure that this can be a livelihood.
And do you think there's progress in that sphere? I mean, we are seeing some big names from the CASAFA region breaking through in Europe. We think with the Zambian youngsters and you mentioned Zimbabweans, but do you see progress in that sphere? Do you think the youngsters of today are perhaps a little bit too complacent, a little bit too comfortable in comparison with maybe previous generations?
Yes and no. I think somewhere the hunger part of it from when you're playing in the old township style setups, there was more that go get this thing to let me get out of here and try and see if I can make it somewhere else. And the other part of it, the development of these so-called academies that have just sprung up all over. Some of our players have gone into this shell in the sense that they think, in inverted commas, that they've already made it because they belong to one of the first division clubs or Super League teams. So again, that drive is, I'm here already, what else do I strive for? So I think the old mentality of trying to get out of, I'll use poverty, for example, to try and get to the next level is something that we then saw before in the old football days.
That's it from another episode of the CASAFA Show. In the meantime, you can listen to more of our podcasts on Soccer Laduma Radio, CASAFA.tv, Spotify and iTunes. And you can also get the latest news via our website at www.casafa.com and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
Thank you for listening. We look forward to your company next time.